The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Good afternoon, John Harper in for Drew. Still enjoying a couple of more days of vacation. He'll be back towards the end of the week here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Blessed to be spending some time with you. You know, I think you and I have been so conditioned to prices going up in just about everything. When you see something that seems like a relative bargain, you go, oh, that's pretty good. For example, I have oil heat, and maybe you have oil heat in your house. And it was at a half tank, and they just filled up the tank. And it was like, oh, I don't want to look at this. Because last winter, and you had this too, that's when gas prices were through the roof. I got one bill to fill up the oil tank that exceeded everything that I paid in the winter of 2020. And I know that happened in the winter of 2021. And I know that happened to you. And so the half tank cost $482. And I'm thinking, boy, that's a bargain, because it was only $4.19 a gallon. But get ready, because there is a story that's happening. This is halfway around the world. It's going to cost you and me more money, not only the gas pump, just when the prices are going down, but also to heat your house this winter. No matter what you use, if you use oil, gas, heat, if you use propane, it's the huge gas pipeline, something to pay attention to. This is the huge gas pipeline from Russia to Europe. It may have been sabotaged. The Danish military is sharing some pictures, and that shows that there are gas leaks bubbling in the Baltic Sea. That's where the line goes, the Baltic Sea. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says the United States has been monitoring that activity from the Nord Stream 2 pipeline.
The leaks are under investigation. There are initial reports indicating that this may be the result of an attack or some kind of sabotage, but these are initial reports and we haven't confirmed that yet. But if it is confirmed, that's clearly in no one's interest.
Now, the suggestion of any kind of sabotage to that pipeline is already showing up at the gas station. How much more are you paying? Have you noticed the prices already starting to go up? Energy expert Tom Closes says, well, that depends on where you live.
If you live on the West Coast, you're watching prices go up 20, 30, 40 cents a day. And, you know, they're going back to the highs we saw in June. If you live in the Midwest, you're seeing similar increases, but not as bad. And if you're in the Southeast, the Gulf Coast or whatever, the markets have been doing the cha-cha with no real direction.
All right. So that's what we have to look forward to. Put those words in quotes, look forward to. Phil Flynn is going to handicap this for us, a senior market analyst and author of The Energy Report at the Price Futures Group. He's also a contributor to Fox Business. And you can find out more at pricegroup.com. That's pricegroup.com. Phil, good afternoon. Welcome back.
John, great to be back. And I guess we should be rooting for the cha-cha, I mean, for prices, right?
Listen, I want to go to the cha-cha gas station. Definitely.
Yeah, you know, I know wherever those, that is.
I want to know if that's a new chain. You know, if you've got a cha-cha gas station in your community, let us know, because Phil and I will carpool over there to fill up. And you know, again, everything's relative, because the last time I got gas, it was $3.29 a gallon, and I'm thinking, gee, just a couple of months ago, it was $5. What a bargain! It's like, well, wait a minute. I was paying $1.99 18 months ago. So what's going on here? But here's the thing that I don't get, and I'm glad that you're on. And I'm sure there are a lot of you who are listening who feel the same way. All right, we have the news about what's going on in this potential sabotage of the pipeline, the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. And in 5 seconds, the price of the pump goes up. How does that happen?
Well, it happens because when we see a major disruption like this, it causes panic buying by the wholesalers who are afraid they're not going to be able to get supply next week. So they have to immediately react to a situation because if they don't go out and buy it, they might not be able to get it. So it's sort of like a panic buying situation. When supplies are disrupted, the wholesalers don't want to be caught short, so they're bidding up the price. Now, usually what will happen, if the disruption is short-term in nature, those prices come down, and sometimes even more than they went up. But in this particular case, there are so many variables that I don't think it's going to come down that quickly.
Mm-hmm. Well, today I went by the gas station that's down the hill, and it's usually the cheapest gas. and it's up a dime. And I'm saying, well, wait a minute. It was just 2 days ago when I was driving by on my way to Mass that I saw the tanker truck filling up the tanks. It's like, that doesn't make sense. They've got a full tank in there that they paid X amount for, and they've already jacked up the price a dime.
Right, but, you know, they sort of sometimes buy on credit, right? And they're buying ahead of time. And, you know, a lot of times these retailers are, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul. And so even though they're selling that, you know, theoretically they bought that gasoline 10 cents cheaper, when they have to pay the man next week to come back with that truck, it's going to cost some more money. So there is that
right.
impact.
Okay.
You know, people complain it's like, you know, rocket and feathers kind of a situation. You know, they go up like a rocket and they fall down like feathers. But, you know, usually when it comes to the retailers, you know, their margins are so slim. So any big, you know, increase in the wholesale price, they have to react very quickly or they could go out of business.
We're talking about the rising cost of fuel and what perhaps could be another very expensive winter. And it is because of these Danish military pictures from the Baltic Sea showing that the Nord Stream 2 pipeline perhaps has been sabotaged by Russia. And of course, that is a major source of energy for Europe. And if the ripple effect is being felt in the tank that you have at home, be it a propane tank, an oil tank, or maybe you have gas heat, that's going to go up as well. The elephant in the room here, Phil Flynn from the Price Group at thepricegroup.com, is when are we going to become energy independent? I know I'm going to cast you as an energy expert here, but you're the author of the Energy Report. They ask you about this on Fox Business, and it really is common sense. It's not political. It's not partisan. But we've got so much energy right here that's available in the United States. And when one domino drops half a world away, it's costing us on top of inflation. You can see our anger and our frustration.
It really is. And I think if you look back at, you know, the low energy prices that we had for many years, it wasn't because Saudi Arabia and OPEC, you know, all of a sudden felt pretty nice towards the United States, like we're good buddies and they wanted to keep prices down. It was really because the United States, for the first time in forever, became competitive on oil and gas production. We had this thing in this country called the shale gas revolution. We reinvented the global energy industry. And, you know, instead of being dependent, you know, on OPEC and foreign countries for oil supplies, we became a major player. That changed the landscape. Now, you know, admittedly here over the last couple of weeks, we've had a lot of things driving oil and gasoline prices, right? You know, we've had refinery outages. You know, we have the war. You know, we have the Federal Reserve pushing the dollar up. But when you get down to the bottom line, the reason why we're seeing this volatility is because the U.S. stepped back from the U.S. oil and gas production. You know, we have an administration right now that's saying, hey, don't invest in oil and gas. You know, we're going to be driving electric cars. So there's been this discouragement of investment, and that has already been felt. And because of that, global spare cushion of supply is very thin. In fact, probably the thinnest it's been, you know, since the 1980s. And because of that, any little disruption in the world is felt by the U.S. consumers almost immediately.
If the president stopped by your office one day, what would you tell him? I mean, these men and women, they're smart people. They got elected to office. We have put our trust in them. They're not stupid people. But this just doesn't make sense. It's like, you know, what don't they get?
I think they're given into their base, you know, the green energy agenda. And there's big money behind this.
But our electric grid is hanging on by a thread. So how can we plug in everything? I'm afraid to plug in the toaster oven and the coffee pot at the same time because the house will go dark. I know by my own electric grid in my house what works, what doesn't work, and you just amplify it. And I'm not picking on any party here, but it really is the fact that our electric grid here in the United States of America is really hanging by a thread. And in some cases, because I was just having a conversation with someone who's a consultant to the energy industry, who was talking about some parts of the infrastructure, the electric infrastructure in the United States, Phil, is 100 years old. Well, you know, how many times have you seen a frayed wire on a lamp, an old lamp that you've had in your house? If you're going into your grandmother's house and it's like, oh, my gosh, look at this frayed. We got to get this thing out of here. It's going to burn the house down. That's what's happening here in the United States. That's a statement of fact.
It absolutely is. And if you listen to the people that look at these things, I mean, we had warnings from the regulatory agencies that the U.S. is at a greater risk of potential power outages this year, probably more than ever, because of the aging infrastructure and increasing demand. And you're right. I mean, I think the people who make these decisions like, oh, we're going to get rid of the internal combustion engine, we're all going to drive electric cars, you know, didn't look at the science and the impact on the environment of doing that or the power grid. And right. The truth is, you know, they're selling this like, hey, buy an electric car. You don't have to worry about gasoline prices. Well, guess what? What's going to happen is the cost of charging your electric car is going to cost you more than it ever would have to fill up your internal combustion engine. And that day is coming. Yeah. Mark my words.
Yeah, because we have seen utility prices skyrocket all across the country. In fact, I just got an envelope from the water company today, and I'm saying, what's this from the water company? Is it an ad? And it's like, no, we've gone before the Department of Public Utilities in your state, and guess what? Your water bill is going to double. It's like, gee, that's just the news that I needed to hear, you know, because listen, whatever you make, we're all on a fixed income, and we're all facing the fact that, you know, when more goes out and less comes in, That's not very good, but that's where we are right now. And we're going to see that happen because of these Danish military photos from the Baltic Sea and the disruption in the pipeline.
And it's, you know, and it's a bigger concern, too, because it's not only that pipeline in Europe. You know, it's a precursor to maybe a larger conflict between Russia and the Ukraine and NATO. Right. So not only is it impacting us economically, you know, from a geopolitical standpoint, this is scary stuff. And when you get scary stuff in the global market, it's usually reflected in more risk premium in the prices for everything you buy.
Absolutely. 888-914-9149. We're talking about a little bit more, not a little bit more, perhaps a lot more, what you're going to pay not only at the pump, but to heat your home this coming winter, at least for now, as we see this huge gas pipeline between Russia and Europe perhaps be sabotaged based on some of the photos from the Danish military in the Baltic Sea. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken earlier today say they're monitoring it as well, the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. And this has been one of the most unprofitable days from a dollars and cents standpoint. I hate to just, you know, give you all of my sad stories here, including the water bill. No good deed goes unpunished. I went to 12 o'clock mass today, and it's a downtown parish, Phil, and the large parking area in back of the church has been leased out to someone, and they're building a big apartment building there. So we have to park in the parking garage right across the street, and it's run by the municipality. And so, you know, there's a little app. It's $1.41 because they now charge you tax to park the car in this community. And so I go into mass. And I come out, 25 minutes later, I got a ticket on my car and I bought an hour's worth of time. And it's like, I don't get this. So there's a telephone. But here's the ticket, by the way, if you want to hear what it sounds like. And so I call the number on the back of the ticket and I'm saying, wait a minute, I got the ticket 15 minutes after I bought an hour of time. And they said, well, let's look at it. I say, oh, we see what happened. Now I'm going to appeal this. On the app that you use, because there's an app that you can use to park, which I think I put on my smartphone 5 years ago, there's one digit off your plate. I'm saying, well, how would I know that my fat fingers made a typo 5 years ago, because I've been parking in that garage for 5 years? And they said, well, if you want to go to traffic court and argue it, and I said, yeah, I will. And, you know, it's like wait a minute, the power of deduction, because there's a picture of my license plate on it. And it's like, well, if you're the citation officer, you see that there's one digit off instead of a zero, it was a nine. could you maybe deduce that it's a typo?
But anyway, well, thank you for letting me hear. He's a parking guy, not a detective, I think.
Exactly.
You've got to get detectives.
Thank goodness for some small things.
Yeah,
thank you for letting me vent here.
I feel better somehow. I don't know why, but I do.
Can I send you the ticket? I'd feel a lot better if you sent me the $50 ticket, by the way. Wow. Yeah, $50.
I'll take a look at it.
$50. Phil Flynn, Senior Market Analyst of the Energy Report at the Price Futures Group, online at pricegroup.com. We're talking about the price of energy, 888-914-9149, to join the conversation or just simply vent as I did. And thank you very much for your patience. Barb is in central Wisconsin. Barb, welcome to the Drew Mariani Show.
Thank you. I've enjoyed the conversation, and it's one of my favorites because I've talked to my congressman for years about how important gas is to our economy. So here's my question. We had energy independence, as you just discussed, until the new administration came in, and they immediately stopped that the day they came in. What could our elected representatives in Congress and the Senate do to stop that from a president coming in and changing that? Could we do anything legally or even in court to keep energy steady and up? You know, like our strategic reserves have gone down. They were full. Things like that are crucial to our defense. And we now are seeing, as you have discussed beautifully, how our energy production and us being, you know, self-sustaining affects Europe. And I know, you know, 45 said that about Russia. So I just am so concerned about this flux and change, because that immediate change really hit us so intensely hard. And it wasn't anything that Congress passed, nothing that our representatives did. We couldn't talk to our representatives about it. It was done with the stroke of a pen, pretty much. So is there some way that, what could Congress do, or what could the courts do? I prefer our representatives do it and vote on it, but what could be done permanently so we wouldn't see this changeover whenever we have a new administration?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're going to have to get Congress together to take away the power of the executive order, you know, especially, you know, when it comes to energy, right? And we have seen a slew of orders as far as, you know, killing the Keystone pipeline, and after it was approved, and, you know, the Keystone of, you know, blocking drilling on federal land, and it really becomes a political football. And when the reason why that's really bad for energy is because you can't invest in an environment where every time you have an election, you have a different party, you know, change the rules on you. So that really discourages investment. So you're going to have to get the country to come together to do that. And you're right about the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. I think the United States is going to regret what we've done with our reserve. And the reason is because the reserve was never built to try to control energy prices, right? You know, first of all, the reserve is too small. You know, I always say, like, trying to control energy prices with a strategic reserve is like trying to put out a wildfire with a squirt gun, right? You know, it might work for a while, but it's not going to do the job. So I think it's going to backfire on us. Thank goodness we have this hurricane in the Gulf of Mexico right now. And, you know, we pray, of course, it doesn't do a lot of damage, but it did miss a lot of the energy infrastructure. But it's very possible if they would have taken out a refinery, we would have seen a major impact on oil prices. And normally we could cool that off by releasing oil from the reserve, but we sent all of our oil reserves to Europe. So it would have been a disaster.
Not to burst that bubble, but I heard a story today on the news, Phil Flynn, as we talk about energy prices here, that the Port of Tampa Bay is a major port for the arrival of gas and oil. Any disruption, any flooding as a result of Hurricane Ian could disrupt, and just as we saw supply chain issues on the West Coast, and everybody, and those ships sitting out there at sea, some are still out there, that may happen as well. So anyway, that's something that we'll continue to monitor.
I mean, you're absolutely correct. It could have been worse. I mean, right now, 11% of oil and gas production in the Gulf of Mexico is shut down. There could be more tomorrow. But during some previous storms, 95% or 99% of that production could have been shut in. But you're right about that port. The good news is that that port, compared to some of the Texas ports, is not as major, you know, as some of the thing we see in Port Arthur and that kind. But you're absolutely right. Whenever you have a storm like this, every storm's different. It can have different impacts. But you're absolutely right. That could be a big issue.
Phil, as you look at the energy and the energy markets, and as a senior market analyst and the author of the Energy Report, what is your take on wind power and solar for the future of energy sources here in the United States?
Well, let's just say that I do not think that these sources of energy right now are ready for prime time. Right. I mean, if you look at the percentage of energy that they've driven for years, we've been throwing tax money and money at this. And to be honest with you, they've failed them many times. In Texas, when we had the cold weather, it failed there. It failed over. And I think even in Norway, I think you and I were mentioning, right, they're thinking about cutting them down. They're actually impacting the reindeer population. Who knew? I mean, that's horrible. I mean, we need reindeers. And in Norway, in fact, in Norway, which they've had a few more than one issues with the wind turbine, apparently the reindeer herders in Norway are upset because the wind turbines is impacting the way that the reindeers, you know, the animal husbandry. So that's a big issue. And on top of that, when they have big winds in Norway, sometimes these wind turbines fail and you've got pieces of wind turbines flying all over the neighborhood. So it's not, you know, it's not all sunshine when it comes to wind turbines. That's for sure.
I saw two reindeer this morning outside the house, and they move pretty fast. Maybe can you ride a reindeer? It's cheaper certainly now than running a car. Molly's in Prescott, Arizona at 888-914-9149 as we talk energy with Phil Flynn. Hi, Molly. Welcome to Relevant Radio.
Hi, thank you. Phil, you mentioned earlier that there's a lot of money to be made here. I wonder if you could expand on that.
Green energy. Yeah, and green energy. Well, I'll tell you, you know, green energy right now, to me, the reason why green energy is an investment is because the government's throwing a lot of money at it. You know, it's kind of interesting. You know, we're kind of touting all these companies are starting to make green electric cars. Not one of these companies, except for Tesla, probably would be doing this if it weren't for the government subsidies. So if for me, personally, and you know, the oil and gas stocks have been getting beat up here this week because of the Federal Reserve. But I personally believe, and again, this is not for everybody, but I personally believe that the old-fashioned oil and gas stocks are going to be very undervalued and can do very well. There's a lot of concern that they're going to put windfall profit taxes on oil companies and things like that. But the bottom line is this. When we look at the next 30 years, the technologies and these lofty aspirations to get off oil and gas are not going to add up. We're going to need a lot of oil and gas. The lack of investment that we've seen in the oil and gas industry has fallen dramatically from what it needs to be to meet demand. So what I believe that you'd be investing in a commodity that, you know, even though they're trying to get rid of, it's going to become very rare and needed. And so whenever you see that, the oil companies can do very, very well. You know, even big companies like ExxonMobil or Chevron do very, very well. And there's a lot of smaller Canadian companies that are a little bit more risky, but I think they could do very well in this environment.
The moral of this segment is walk more. And now there's a new study that says if you walk more, it perhaps can lessen your chances of getting Alzheimer's when you get older. And it's also less stress on your body, too, as a walker. So I tend to walk to places where I used to drive. And so it's, you know, maybe another extra gallon in the tank and just some of the things that we may have to do. And remember Jimmy Carter back in the 70s when we went through the energy crisis, wear another sweater, turn the thermostat down. We may have to do that again. Everything boomerangs here after 50 years, but we'll continue to follow this because obviously what's happening in the Baltic Sea with these pictures from the Danish military and the perhaps sabotage of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline that Russia is doing, the major supplier of energy to Europe, is something that continues to be monitored, and that's something that the Department of State is doing in Washington, D.C. How it affects you and me at the pump and heating our homes, Phil Flynn will continue to watch that for us, the senior market analyst and the author of the Energy Report, online at PriceGroup.com. Phil, thank you very much, and I'll put the parking ticket in the mail to you today.
Thank you. I'll pick it up, and I'll give it to the reindeer. He'll send it back to you.
There you go, I bet. Absolutely. Thanks. Isn't that how it works? Life works that way, at least for me. Phil, thanks. God bless.
Thank
John
you,
Harper in for Drew this afternoon here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
You know, we receive over a million prayer requests every year, thanks in part to the Catholic Order of Foresters Studio Line, helping us stay connected to your intentions. Learn how our sponsor can support your family with life insurance at relevantradio.com/Forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
John Harper in for Drew this afternoon, who's back from vacation in a couple of days. If you missed a portion of the Patrick Madrid Show, or really any of the shows here on Relevant Radio, just go to the show page up at relevantradio.com, and you can hear all of the podcasts of the shows and very easily share them with your friends. But one of the callers to the Patrick Madrid Show was asking about suicide. And it's always been considered by the Catholic Church as a grave offense, which is obviously one of the elements that constitutes mortal sin. You know that. But there are three requirements for mortal sin. One is the reflection on what you're going to do, and of course, the consent of your free will. And then when you go into the Catechism of the Catholic Church, there is language that talks about grave psychological disturbances, anguish, grave fear of hardship, suffering. I'm condensing what's in the Catechism of the Catholic Church. And the key phrase here in terms of what we're going to talk about on the Drew Mariani Show is we should not despair of the eternal salvation of persons who have taken their own lives. Now, the Church does give the benefit of the doubt to a suicide victim and will grant a Catholic funeral and burial. And the Church also makes a pastoral judgment that there may have been unusual circumstances, some mitigating circumstances that that person, maybe it's depression, maybe it's mental health, may not have been capable of making the decision of full freedom at that moment that they took their life. It's a complicated issue, and that's very personal to our next guest, Deacon Ed Schoner, who serves at St. Peter's Cathedral in the Diocese of Scranton, Pennsylvania. And Deacon Ed is the founding member of the Association of Catholic Mental Health Ministers and the Catholic Institute of Mental Ministry at the University of San Diego. And Deacon Schoner, along with Bishop John Dolan, co-authored the books Responding to Suicide, a Pastoral Handbook for Catholic Leaders, and the other book, When a Loved One Dies by Suicide. And the website is Catholic MHM, Mary, Harry, Mary, CatholicMHM.org. He's joining us from Minnesota, where he's giving some workshops on rural suicide. Deacon Ed, welcome to Relevant Radio.
Hi, John. How are you today?
We're blessed to have you on. This is a very personal story for you, isn't it?
Yes, it is. My daughter, Katie, beautiful young woman, struggled with bipolar disorder, a type of mood disorder, which should have highs of mania and terrible lows of depression, came on in her late teens in high school. She was a beautiful girl, salutatorian to class, National Honor Society, all that sort of stuff. But this illness came over her, and her first attempt at suicide was when she was a senior in high school. And she subsequently took her and us, her family, a while to understand what this mental illness is. But she subsequently got mental health care, and she led a very good life. She went through college, went to Penn State, and then went on to Ohio State, got a master's in business administration. But, you know, I'll tell you, John, these mental illnesses are relentless. And sadly, she died by suicide in August 3rd of 2016. But she was a beautiful girl, and we miss her. We miss her dearly.
They're relentless, Deaconette, and they're also hidden as well, because I'm sure you've heard this, and it is always a part of the conversation when somebody sadly takes their own life, where you just say, gee, we never knew, or she was or he was so cheerful. Tell us about fine-tuning our sensitivity to perhaps some of the warning signs so we can intervene in any way, shape, or form to help these individuals who may look okay by just having a conversation with them, but there's a lot going on inside.
There's a lot going on. Katie was one of those people, if you met her, you would never know she was struggling with a mental illness except on her bad day. She was cheerful, outgoing, joyous, beautiful woman. I mean, think of celebrities, someone like Robin Williams, who was literally the funniest guy in the room, died by suicide. Yeah, it knows no bounds. I mean, the thing you can look for is like my daughter Katie would have her bad days, and she would talk to people about it. Now, obviously, Katie got into mental health care and treatment early in her life, but many people self-discriminate in a sense. They don't want to acknowledge that they have a mental health problem or mental illness and don't go get the care they have. So if you see a friend or a loved one that's starting to, their behavior's starting to change, or they're not doing things that they used to do or that they like doing and on a regular basis, you can start to open up this conversation in a non-judgmental way and ask them, you know, why you've noticed things are changing. Is everything okay? Ask open-ended questions. Don't say, like, what's wrong with you, or you need to get see a psychiatrist right off the bat. Encourage them to talk and start to open up a conversation and encourage them in a non-stigmatizing way that they might want to consider mental health care. You're not a bad Catholic if you go get mental health care or see a psychiatrist. Right. If anything, these medical aids are gifts from God. They're just like a cancer treatment is and heart treatment is. Well, these mental health care treatment programs are also gifts from God, as we better understand the human person and human psychology. The treatments, Lord knows they're not what they need to be yet, that's for sure. But they're a lot better than nothing. So I would say open a conversation and gently encourage people to get the mental health care that they need when it becomes clear that that's what's needed. And I would be quick to add, prayer always helps, accompanying people. I mean, that's what Christ did, was accompany people and be with them. And, you know, because so often people struggle with these mental illnesses, and particularly depression and anxiety, not only do they think that their loved ones don't care for them anymore, and they tend to isolate and not be around people, they also start to think God no longer loves them. I mean, these illnesses affect our relationship with God also. It's, you know, not just human beings, but it affects the relationship with God. So we can help them to reassure them. Pope Benedict talked about how it's important to tell people it's good that they exist, because so often people question that. They wonder if it really is good that they exist. So we can just love people and tell them that no matter what's going on in their lives, that it's good that they exist and that they're loved.
Deaconette Schoner is our guest this afternoon. He serves at St. Peter's Cathedral in the Diocese of Scranton, Pennsylvania. And we're talking when a loved one takes their own life. We're talking about suicide and not only the mental health components of it, but the faith components of it as well. Our number here is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149, as we shed some light on this very critical issue. You said something that's key, that's important to underscore here in our conversation, Deaconette. When we talk about those who suffer from some form of mental illness, it is the same as any other illness, that it's an illness. It's not a stigma. It's an illness, and thus should be treated as such, as we would have the same compassion for someone who's suffering from cancer. We need to do the same thing with someone who's suffering from some form of mental illness.
You were so right, John, that it's self-stigmatization, and not to think of themselves as being lesser Catholic, or that it's a moral failing or a character flaw, that they have clinical depression or schizophrenia or whatever the illness is. That it's you know, we wouldn't blame someone who had cancer by saying, you know, it's your fault that you got this cancer or a heart disease. You know, it's sort of, and for those of us Christians to remember, I always refer back to the stories in Scripture about lepers. If you could imagine what it must have been like for a parent back 2,000 years ago when you know, their child might have started to have some blisters or rashes on their skin. How heartbreaking that must be. Is this leprosy? Is this what's happening to my child? Are they going to be ostracized to the outside of town? Are they going to be not allowed back into the temple? Will no one understand it? Will they think it's because of the sin of my, of me and my grandparents? You know, all these things went through the minds of people back in the days of leprosy. We now know leprosy is an illness. It's not a moral failing or a flaw, like unfortunately the people 2,000 years ago thought. Well, there's still, that's still part of the stigma with mental illness. That's still out there a little bit, that maybe it's a, you know, a failing of the family, something like that. And we need to get way past that, like we're way past these misbeliefs about leprosy, and realize that they're illnesses, and love people and support them just as Christ does support them.
Deacon Ed, in your experience, what is the, can you describe the infrastructure of Catholic mental health resources here in the United States, and perhaps where they need to be shored up, or also perhaps you know, resources that are out there that we're not aware of?
Yeah, I mean, the Catholic Church for many years, of course, through Catholic Charities, many dioceses provided therapy and counseling, clinical type of support through Catholic charities. But there's this new ministry that you mentioned at the beginning of this segment where we're trying to, I and a number of other people are encouraging the growth of a ministry, Catholic mental health ministry within the church, that it become a common ministry like grief support ministry or prison ministry or youth ministry, that it's just a common ordinary ministry that's available in every parish, which would be wonderful and would be our, you know, that's the ultimate goal of something like this. It's a new ministry. We've been at it only 3 or 4 years, and I tell you, John, God can turn everything to the good, and even the evil of suicide, and suicide is evil. After my daughter Katie died, we wrote a short obituary about how, just intending to explain it to our parish community in Scranton, that she had a mental illness, and she died by suicide, but she shouldn't be judged that way, and she should remember it as a beautiful child of God, and that she loved Christ. And this short obituary went viral, and it led me to realize, and I heard from many people calling for this type of ministry within the church. So I joined with John Dolan, Bishop John Dolan. He's now the Bishop of Phoenix, who lost 2 siblings to suicide and a brother-in-law to suicide, and are starting to encourage this ministry in the church and growing it. So I would, you know, go to our webpage, CatholicMHM.org, and we have lots of resources there on how to start this ministry. But the key word, John, is this is a ministry. It's not mental health care. Mm-hmm. It's a ministry that right. accompanies people and walks with them, like the Good Samaritan, or maybe if they're carrying their crosses of mental illness, maybe like Simon of Cyrene. Just help them carry the crosses and know that they're accompanied and that they're loved and that they're parish community supports them in any way that they're possible, that they're not condemned or ostracized in any way.
And also, Deacon Ed, in the context of this conversation, and I know I'm taking a broad interpretation of Sunday's gospel, is the person with mental health, perhaps even in our own family, is Lazarus outside the door. And, yes, you know, we need to let them into our hearts. And help them, yes, not only on a faith basis, but on a mental health basis as well.
Right. We're not professional. Most of us are not professional mental health right. care providers, but we can encourage them to get that type of care. But, you know, so often they just need to be reassured they're loved, that they're cared for, that they're welcomed into the family. And admittedly, sometimes that can take a lot of patience because sometimes with depression and anxiety, it can be difficult to be with them, but it's important that we accompany them and constantly remind them that they're loved by God. And I would say this, too, with our family members, that when you are caring for someone with mental health and a mental illness condition, is to take care of yourself, too. I mean, that's an important part of accompanying someone, is to make sure that you're well-grounded in your faith and that you're taking care sure. of your own mental health care, too. So both of those things are important.
The website, the ministry, is CatholicMHM.org, as in Mental Health Ministry, CatholicMHM.org. Check that out with Deacon Ed Schoner, who is in Minnesota right now doing some workshops on rural suicide, as Deacon Ed has shared with us with great compassion and care and with a great deal of faith, talking about the suicide of his daughter at the age of 29. And we're helping you out as well at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149, as we continue on The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
John in for Drew this afternoon, talking about the very important issue of suicide and suicide here in the Catholic Church. I was explaining what the Catechism says about suicide, and we're having an important conversation here with Deacon Ed Schoner, who serves at St. Peter's Cathedral in the Diocese of Scranton, Pennsylvania, and with Bishop John Dolan, the co-author of books Responding to Suicide, a Pastoral Handbook for Catholic Leaders, and also When a Loved One Dies by Suicide. There's much more in a relatively new ministry. It's been up for about 4 years, Catholic Mental Health Ministry. The website is Catholic MHN, as in Mental Health Ministry, CatholicMHN.org. And Deacon Ed is sharing the story about his 29-year-old daughter who took her own life as well. And we're helping you at 888-994-9149. Mary Beth is joining us in Milwaukee, listening to Relevant Radio 100.1. Mary Beth, good afternoon. You're on with Deacon Ed. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I am a parent of a now 17-year-old daughter. She is adopted internationally, a family nurse practitioner. I do have concerns about my daughter, but my question is broader than just my daughter, and it regards our legal system right now, where a 14-year-old has the legal authority to decide whether or not they have a mental health issue. What this does is prevent oftentimes a teenagers from getting a help they need, especially when behaviors are observed in the house only. This has been documented in newspapers where parents aren't being supported. I myself have tried to get my daughter in to no avail because of that law. I was wondering if you could address that, if you've had knowledge of that. Again, I know there's been articles in the paper about it, and I've talked to other parents, and it's very frustrating, and it doesn't help kids who really need some mental health issues, especially since COVID. That's one of my questions. The second part of that question concerns perhaps your daughter that committed suicide. It sounds like she was a very bright girl, well-educated, motivated. Do you think there's an increased incidence in suicide for people who have a higher intellect and don't get the support they need? And how best can a parent support teenager who has significantly good grades and not push them over the edge?
Mary Beth, a very concerned parent, Deacon Ed, and a lot in that question. Can you help?
Right. Yeah, well, she's right about a number of things. But the one issue with the law, that is an issue across this country, that you can't mandate or the police can't force anyone into mental health care, and this includes parents, unless they are talking about suicide or if they're talking about harming someone else. And then you can call the police, and then they will take them, and they can be forced into the hospital for treatment for at least a few days and up to 30 days in some places, depending on the circumstances. So I would say that if someone's talking about suicide or talking about harming someone else in a serious way, don't be reluctant to call. And now there's a new number to call for mental health concerns, 988. This is just something that started in the last month or so in the United States. So 911 for traditional emergencies of fires and that sort of thing, but 988 for a mental health crisis. So I would ask all your listeners to remember that. If there's a crisis, call 988 and you'll be immediately put in touch with a mental health professional and counselor and help you work through the crisis. The other thing I would say about supporting people who have mental illness is often, you know, very bright people, but I tell you, it doesn't discriminate based on intellect either. I mean, very bright people and maybe people with lower IQs, I guess, everyone's affected by these mental illnesses. And the best thing that we can do is encourage our children to get mental health care and to advocate and insist on better mental health care and, you know, basically declare war on suicide. Our society's declared war on HIV. HIV and cancer and all other sorts of things. And these death rates have dropped for these other types of illnesses. For suicide, the death rate, it's been up in the last 20 or 30 years or so, but it's still basically about what it was 100 years ago. The suicide death rates have gone up and down over the years. They're basically the same as they've been for a very, very long time. And we have to get past that and start to demand that there be more research and better care and better treatments so we can get these death rates down, declare war on suicide.
As you speak to that point, Deacon Ed, when you see the statistics, and they're relatively new in the last 12 months or so, certainly since we've been dealing with COVID-19, where you see rates of depression among young men and women in high school starting to go through the roof, what does that tell you, and how should we start addressing it? Because if these numbers are as great as they're reported to be, a lot of moms and dads who are hearing this conversation who are seeing some of the warning signs that you and your wife saw with Katie.
Yes, I mean, and I think it's important on a faith-based show like this to maybe think a little bit about the distinction between depression and desolation. You're probably familiar with that word, John, and I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with the word desolation. So depression is something clinical that a mental health care provider can treat and try to, through therapy or through medicines, and start to bring that depression under control, and it affects all areas of your life. But I think as a religious and as a spiritual matter, we need to also be paying attention to desolation within our own personal lives and the lives of our children, that maybe they're starting to draw away from the faith, draw away from the church, be isolated from each other and be isolated from the church. And this can cause a desolation where we feel as though we're not loved by God, and we can start to feel tremendous anxieties, which is different than mental health, depression, and anxiety. So I would say there's two things. One, get mental health care for depression, for true depression. But one way to help our children is to try to build back up our faith community, our spiritual communities, and to try to start to begin what I see as this emerging issue of spiritual desolation, where we're being isolated from our faith communities, and we need God in our lives, and we need a loving faith community to help support us. So I think a lot of what we see in our young people, these rises, is also in part a spiritual desolation in addition to a medical depression.
And as we talk about it, not only a spiritual desolation, but desolation in general, is it because we have now two generations, and even for us, as older generations, we're so attached to our smartphone that we're looking down instead of looking straight ahead into somebody's eyes to have a relationship with a human being? We're having a relationship with an inanimate object.
Right. We all need relationships with each other. We need a relationship with God. And if we don't have that, yes, we'll start to experience a desolation. And the true clinical depression that many of us are dealing with will be exacerbated, will be made worse. So it's a complicated thing. I mean, you can have both desolation and depression at the same time. And the other thing I would say that I think troubles us and our culture is this old sin of acedia or sloth. But I think acedia is a better word for it, because you talk about with smartphones, where we're distracted from things of God. So it's not just that we're lazy and not worshiping, but that we're distracted and we're pulled in 1,000 different directions and fail to see the presence of God in our lives and to discern how God's guiding all of us. With the spirit of evil will pull us away through this temptation of acedia or sloth. So I think all of this feeds into what we are seeing with this emerging mental health crisis it's being exasperated. I mean, depression, anxiety has always been part of the human condition. But when we start to lose our faith and lose touch with the church, it can only make things worse. So, my great hope is that and I think that's the hope of a mental health ministry. Not I think. I know that's the hope of a mental health ministry, that we can be a loving community that recognizes these depressions, anxieties, and mental health disorders, and we can provide that sort of support so this desolation that sort of draws people down and makes them feel as though they're unloved by God, that no longer becomes an issue. They can be surrounded by the love of a faithful community who helps them and guides them and supports them in their desire to get the proper sort of mental health care that they need. We're mind, body, and spirit, aren't we, John? So mind and body, mental health care professionals, but it's important when we're struggling with mental health challenges, we need the spiritual support of a community and of the church. And that's what we hope mental health ministries in the life of our parishes will provide.
And this is a relatively new but growing ministry that you can find online from Deacon Ed Schoner. It's CatholicMHM.org, CatholicMHM.org. There are many resources there if you know someone who is suffering from some sort of mental illness. And it's not the stigma of suicide. It's not the stigma of mental illness. Emphasis on the word illness, and that's an important distinction. And there are so many things that you can learn by going to CatholicMHM.org. Deacon Ed Schoner, thank you. God bless you. We'll be praying for the repose of the soul of your daughter, Katie, and also praying for the continued growth of your ministry at CatholicMHM.org. Thanks for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, John. Thank you for talking about this important topic. Thank you.
Deacon Ed Schoner, who is serving at St. Peter's Cathedral in the Diocese of Scranton all through the night and tomorrow morning on Morning Air, the latest on Hurricane Ian, now some 200 miles south of Sarasota, Florida. This will be the major focus, the intentions of the safety of the people on the west coast of Florida. And, of course, the diminishing of the storm. We've seen the power of the prayer do that. And this will be the major intention tonight on the Family Rosary Across America with Father Rocky at 7 Central. And we want to leave you with the prayer for protection from Hurricane Ian from Bishop Gregory Parks of the Diocese of St. Petersburg, Florida.
This is Bishop Gregory Parks of the Diocese of St. Petersburg. As Hurricane Ian approaches our area, as we make our final preparations, and as we begin to feel the effects of this storm, I invite you to pray with me this prayer for protection during a storm. Loving God, maker of heaven and earth, protect us in your love and mercy. Send the Spirit of Jesus to be with us, to still our fears, and to give us confidence. In the stormy waters, Jesus reassured his disciples by his presence, calmed the storm, and strengthened their faith. Guard us from harm during this storm, and renew our faith to serve you faithfully. Give us the courage to face all difficulties and the wisdom to see the ways your Spirit binds us together in mutual assistance. With confidence, we make our prayer through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. May God bless you and stay safe.
Stay safe and God bless you. Here from Relevant Radio.